I'll raise it if I can. Soldiers have their sorrow, the wretched have their rage. Pray for the aged, it's the dawn of another age, of another age, of another age, of another age, of another age.
Hello, welcome to Radio Free Kanata. This is Kevin Anager, host with Ryan Gable, and it's November 1st, and we're here today with a special edition of the show. As you remember, previously we announced we were going to take a couple of weeks off, but some very startling events have compelled this show today. Also, this last weekend, Samhain, the Irish New Year, otherwise known as All Saints Day or Halloween, this weekend witnessed a very historic event, a gathering of the key district conveners and organizers of the Republic of Kanata movement in Canada with basically the general staff of the International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State, the ITCCS. We held a joint general council meeting near the city of Montreal in Canada. And there's a very important news communique that's coming out tomorrow. It'll be all over the global media tomorrow. But I'm going to ask Ryan to start the show just by reading this communique. That'll be out tomorrow, and it'll be posted up at itccs.org. Ryan, go ahead, please.
Breaking news communique from the ITCCS Central Council, meeting in closed session in Montreal, Canada, November 1st, 2015. Investigative team definitively links top Canadian politicians, churchmen to child trafficking and sacrifices, and to death of investigator. Key ITCCS leaders placed in protective quarantine. From Montreal, after nearly a year of investigations and relying on undercover informants, the ITCCS has established that at least two Canadian senators, a former cabinet minister in the Harper government, and three senior church officials are actively engaged in trafficking children for sexual and sacrificial purposes in the Ottawa-Montreal area. The ITCCS has also learned that these same accused men are complicit in the 2014 murder of Ottawa Police Inspector Cal Gabon, who was investigating the disappearance of children at the hands of the accused, and that key ITCCS investigators in Canada, including Reverend Kevin Annette, are also being targeted for elimination by them. The six accused men are Senators Larry Campbell and Patrick Brassaw, former Harper Cabinet Minister Denis Lebel, Quebec Catholic Cardinal Gerald Lacroix, and Anglican Bishops Fred Hiltz and Bob Bennett. The full details of the exhaustive investigation by a special ITCCS team were shared this past weekend with the ITCCS Central Council during its closed gathering near Montreal. In response, the council has placed Reverend Kevin Annette and other Canadian investigators under a protective quarantine and announced plans to convene a new common law court in Canada in the new year to indict and prosecute the six accused men. The council will be issuing a full public statement to the global media this week, along with excerpts from the investigative report. A council spokesman said today, quote, "All of the accused men have been under investigation for some time. Senator Campbell has been named by police sources in Vancouver as a major suspect in the disappearance of Aboriginal women at the notorious Picton Farm. Senator Brassaw has already pleaded guilty in a Quebec court to charges of sexual assault with a deadly weapon and drug trafficking. Denis Lebel, his friend Cardinal Lacroix, and Bishops Hiltz and Bennett have all been named by the government and church insiders as active participants in the Ninth Circle ritual killing of children at secret Catholic Church facilities in Montreal and Rome. We will be issuing indictments against all of these men based on sworn testimony," end quote.
Ryan, thank you. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. I wanted to give some folks a little bit of background to what's happened. I was at this gathering, and then actually I'm still engaged in it. And one of the things that was obvious, this was a gathering of almost 30 people. These people for many years have been involved as professionals, both as security consultants, insiders in the legal and political world, and in the religious world. These are people in the know, and they are acting on the basis of inside informants. These are people who have actually risk their lives, and uncovering the fact that, for example, the Ottawa police inspector you mentioned, Cal Gadban, he was killed directly as a result of him uncovering the fact that this senior cabinet minister in the former government of Stephen Harper, Denis Lebel, was present at a Ninth Circle ritual in Rome with his friend Cardinal Lacroix, Gerald Lacroix, who's now actually the head primate for all of Canada for the Catholic Church. And he was appointed directly by Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis. Now, it's clear on the basis of what we talked about this weekend and the information we've got is that one of the reasons Pope Francis came to America and they did such an incredible snow job on everyone trying to pump him as this great humanitarian was basically because he had to come here to turn off the sources to contain this because he himself, his own guys, are linked to these killings, including this Gerald Lacroix, who has actually been in Bergoglio's camp for many years, has been one of his active supporters. So I have more background on that, Ryan, but I want to get your comments first, and then I want to give more information on these two senators, especially Larry Campbell and Patrick Brazeau, who Brazeau's been in the news recently because he was just acquitted by the federal government for all of these charges. But I'd like your take first, your comments.
Yeah, so today's the first time I've heard about a lot of the details into this investigation, and I think that more and more over the next couple of days, as I learn more about it, I'd be able to give a better kind of viewpoint on all of these issues. But I do think that something's very significant that ties directly in with this investigation, and it's something that you mentioned to me, sort of a, quote, cleaning of house that's taking place within these institutions. A couple of days ago, there was a guy in the UK, this was reported by the BBC, his name is David Smith. He was found dead ahead of a sexual abuse trial that was taking place. It was called the Yew Tree Inquiries. And the Yew Tree Inquiries were investigations into allegations of historical sexual abuse linked to the entertainment industry in Britain, tied in with people such as Jimmy Savile and the royal family. And as this guy is about to testify, he's been convicted in the past of molesting young little boys, I think in the 1980s. He molested a 12-year-old and he was convicted of this. Now this man ends up dead right basically on the eve of going to testify against those higher-ups involved in these crimes. And at the same time, Kevin, I want to bring this to the public's attention because I don't think it's as talked about globally. It's sort of an issue that's been more so mulled over by the American people that are very disgusted about it. The restaurant Subway, that has a lot of restaurants globally, the sandwich chain, they had a spokesman named Jared Fogel. He was a father of two and he had a wife still. And he has now been, there's audio recordings of this, he is now pleading guilty to not just the possession of child pornography, but participating with a man named Russell Taylor in acts of child abuse and child pornography while Jared Fogel would basically molest these kids. The head of his foundation to help kids fight obesity, which was what was promoted by the Subway restaurant, the head of his foundation, Russell Taylor, would film these children getting undressed. This all came out in court documents and audio recordings, and he's about to plead guilty to all of this. And the way the media portrayed it was that he only paid 16-year-old girls for sex, and they used the word youth to describe the other children. And when I first heard this, I said, that means that these are boys. And sure enough, Kevin, when the interview came out and it was released of the audio of him talking to some undercover people that were working to expose him, he indeed said that he was targeting young boys as well as young girls. This ties in with a much larger network, and these are just isolated cases that seem very isolated. They seem very one-sided, but it ties into a much, much larger network, and it ties into what you're talking about in this new investigation, I believe.
Right. Now, I it is related, of course, but I do want to stay focused very much on the theme for tonight. I know you've got other stuff we can talk about in the second half, Ryan, but the reason we're bringing this up today about this the involvement of these politicians and church leaders is that it was alleged before, a bit of background for people, last year in Montreal on August 15th, a special group from Europe actually disrupted a planned sacrificial event of the Ninth Circle in a house in Outremont, Quebec, which is a wealthy suburb of Montreal. And on the basis of information they found out that Cal Gadban had been investigating the same group and had been killed because he discovered that the Harper cabinet minister, Denis LaBelle, was linked to this Ninth Circle, sacrificial killings. No, so this was a political assassination of a police chief. Now, we have spoken to some of the relatives of Cal Gadban, and they agree. They have never believed the official story that Inspector Gadban just killed himself one night in the Ottawa police station. There was no reason for him to. He was a decorated officer, happily married man with three kids, and suddenly he just shoots himself in the police station. It doesn't, it was never followed up with any kind of autopsy or report. He was just dead after that, the whole issue. Well, we have definite confirmation now that a hit was ordered on him, and we even know probably the name of the assassin. And I want to get into this, but it comes down to the story of the two senators. We've talked about, LaBelle and Lacroix. We've talked about the Anglican bishops before, and we'll rehash that. But these two are new, and I want to describe the two of them. First of all, this Patrick Brazeau. Now, his name has been in the news just this last week in Canada. He was a Canadian senator, an Aboriginal man, a Cree so-called chief from Saskatchewan, who people may not remember this, but do you remember during the apology, the so-called apology for the residential school genocide, when Stephen Harper was making that apology in Parliament, the man sitting right next to him, like a little puppet Indian chief, was Patrick Brazeau. And he was being cultivated by the Harper government as the Tory-appointed senator who was going to be, the chief puppet Indian politician on the side of the Harper government. Then this, about for the last 2.5 years, this he's been on trial for he attacked women with a knife while raping them, and he was heavily involved in the cocaine trafficking off the Indian reservations. Just this last week, in all the newspapers in Canada, it was reported that Senator Patrick Brazeau has been not only found innocent, but his entire record has been wiped clean. So he has no criminal record, even though he had already pleaded guilty to
He pleads guilty to the sexual assault, and even though he pleads guilty, he gets off with a clean record.
That's right. No criminal record, no charges, and he's being paid all the back pay, over $50,000 as a senator the whole time. Now, nobody does that, has that level of protection, unless they know a lot of dirt and they're being manipulated themselves, and a deal was struck, obviously. Now, the thing about Patrick Brazeau is he's connected to the top Native chiefs, who are the main source of child trafficking off the Aboriginal reservations, both in Canada and the United States. And it ties into that other senator, Larry Campbell, because Campbell has been mentioned by police insiders for many years as one of the chief Canadian politicians involved in the ritual killing of Aboriginal women. There was the thing called the Picton Farm, Dave and Willie Picton. Willie Picton went to jail for being the Lee Harvey Oswald of the scapegoat after they began to find the disemboweled remains of Aboriginal women on the Picton Farm in Coquitlam, British Columbia. Now, Larry Campbell himself was a participant in these killings, and we know that. Larry Campbell is not only a senator. He was the mayor of Vancouver. He was chief coroner for the province of British Columbia, and there's a link. A coroner is always placed that way in order to cover up a lot of these killings. And prior to that, he was actually a member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police on the drug squad, but he never did any drug busts, interestingly enough. So this guy has a very questionable record from the beginning. Now, we know this about Larry Campbell because of a former agent of the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. That's Canada's CIA, CSIS it's called. His name is Grant Wakefield. He spoke to me a number of years ago. He's gone public with this, and of course he was being attacked, taken to court. They put a gag order on him. But this Grant Wakefield, as he spoke to me a number of times in person about this, we met in Vancouver in the downtown east side. He showed me his ID, his qualifications, everything. Grant Wakefield was an undercover infiltrator at the Picton Farm. It's called Piggy's Palace. There had been right-wing vigilante groups operating in the area, and Grant Wakefield's job was to infiltrate the Piggy's Palace, which was, the Picton Farm, when they were bringing these Aboriginal women, using them in snuff films, and then ritually killing them. It turns out, according to Grant Wakefield, this corruption goes incredibly high. It involves senior members of the government, here's one example. The public prosecutor, his name was Ian Donaldson. He was a Queen's Counsel, head of the Law Society in British Columbia, and Randy Connor, who was a Crown Counsel. Those were the ones who actually stayed the charges. They had definite proof that not only the Picton brothers, but these politicians were involved in ritually killing women at the site. It turns out that Randy Connor and Ian Donaldson stopped the proceedings against these people. These two individuals, Donaldson and Connor, are themselves shareholders in the company that owns the land at Picton's Palace. It's called Eternal Holdings. It was listed on the Vancouver Stock Exchange as a numbered company in the 1990s. These people own the land where these killings are going on, and they're also the ones who stay the proceedings. This is some of the information, you know, that came out. But we know in the course of this that the very man who appointed Larry Campbell as a senator, former Prime Minister Paul Martin, was himself seen by Grant Wakefield at Piggy's Palace. Now, don't forget, these killings were being done in wealthy homes in Vancouver. The Picton brothers were simply the cleanup crew, the disposal unit, and they took the fall for it. But we're talking former prime ministers, senior judges, politicians, and, you know, I can get into more names later. But this is from this inside CSIS operative. And this is linked together these two senators who we now know are connected to the Ninth Circle killings.
On first thought, Kevin, it seems like it's almost a very deeply rooted type of conspiracy. So let me ask you this question. This is something I get asked a lot. If you look at the senators Campbell and Patrick Brazeau or other high-level politicians and businessmen that might be involved in these killings, do these people do this due to a vested personal interest and a liking to committing these crimes, or is it something that more than often they are blackmailed into participating in for some reason or not?
It could be any combination of the two, and we can't, you know, we're not in the position of reading a crystal ball or doing, psychological, prophesying about why these people do these things. All we know is that they've been named by very credible inside sources as doing it. We also know it's a very lucrative industry. One example is this Eternal Holdings, which is the company that owned the farm where owned the land where the Picton farm stands. It is also, or Eternal Holdings also is part of a kind of a conglomerate which includes a thing called Lionsgate Security. Now, guess who? Lionsgate Security was run by a former RCMP officer called Jim Brown. And guess who provided private security for Senator, and still does provide private security for Senator Larry Campbell? Jim Brown, who owned Lionsgate Security, which is tied to the company, the holding company that owns the land. So you see, it's all connected, to the snuff companies operate totally in the open. One of them, it's called, I'm just looking in now on my notes, which are quite extensive here. There was a snuffield company that operated for many years openly. It's called BestGore.com, if you can believe it. BestGore, G-O-R-E.com. I'm not sure if the site is still up, but it was running out of Edmonton. A guy called Mark Merrick, again, a shareholder in Eternal Holdings. So, I mean, you know, the names go on and on.
It sounds like very, very, very big, surgically maneuvered business.
Very much. And, you know, don't forget, there's also offshore interests involved. We know that the snuff film industry in British Columbia is huge. It operates in the Pacific Rim network, running out of Thailand and China, where, you know, a lot of the organ trafficking and human trafficking goes on. But it's also connected to that hub between Seattle and Vancouver, where a lot of this child trafficking goes on. And another, I wanted to kind of report about what we talked about this last weekend. One of the things we found was one of the sources, as we were going through all this evidence together and looking at it, one of the sources described that there's a strong human trafficking route that goes between Montreal and Philadelphia. Now, don't forget, Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis, when he visited, he came to Philadelphia at that world meeting of the families. Right. And that's where, you know, Philadelphia is where the over half the Catholic priests in that town were identified as being involved in trafficking young children. That came out in the trial of William Lynn, the Monsignor for Philadelphia. Now, it obviously, this hub between Philadelphia and Montreal, this is one of the ways that the children are trafficked.
Kevin, the Utrecht trials, Y-E-W-T-R-E-E, that were taking place and still are taking place in the United Kingdom right now, they are specifically, there's three tiers to this investigation into the sexual abuse, and it ties into a much larger network into Canada and what you're discussing, but they specifically were targeting the investigation into the entertainment industry. Now, from my understanding and from some of the research I've done, I think that Hollywood and a lot of the big producers in Hollywood are also directly tied in with the snuff film industry. That doesn't mean I can name names or that we should name names, but is this something that pervades more than just politics? Does this tie in with the entertainment industry? Does this tie in with other, not just religious or political institutions, but other aspects of society as well?
Absolutely it does. You know, there's been a lot of stuff written about the casting couch and young actors, you know, as child actors had to, were trafficked by their own parents in order to get parts in that. That's a commonly known thing about Hollywood. What isn't so well known and where people don't like to go is when it does involve senior government and church people. It's interesting, you know, whether it's the Aboriginal world or the white world or wherever, people will talk around the issue of child trafficking off the reservations. They'll never name names like we did today on the show because they're afraid. They know that people go missing on these reservations all the time. But what we found, and we found in the past, whenever we name names, these people never respond. It's universal. They will never respond to these accusations against themselves. Now, if you were innocent, Ryan, and I said over the air that you were a child trafficker, wouldn't you take measures? Wouldn't you sue me? Wouldn't you speak out?
Absolutely, especially if you're these people and you have the means to do so.
Right. But I predict that we will not hear from any of these people, whether it's Senators Campbell or Brazeau, Denis LaBelle or Gerald Lacroix. We haven't heard from them. We mentioned them last year. And these Bob Bennett and Fred Hiltz. Now, I forgot to mention these two Anglican guys, of course. We first came across them in the original common law court trial into genocide in Canada, where they were part of the so-called Dirty 30, the 30 defendants who were named as not only complicit in the deaths of children in Indian residential schools, but in the concealment of it. And both Hiltz and Bennett actively destroyed records linking the royal family to the deaths and torture of children at the Mohawk residential school in Brantford for a number of decades. There's standing arrest warrants out under common law court processes. Arrest warrants for Hiltz and Bennett. But don't forget that all of this is indicating this bigger web going on. One of the things that came up at the meeting this weekend was that there's a liaison that actually operates between this thing called the Holy Alliance. That's the Vatican Security Service. They undertake not only espionage for the Vatican, but assassinations. They've been around since the 1500s. They were set up by the Jesuits to try to assassinate Queen Elizabeth I because she was providing sanctuary to so many Protestants and others around Europe. The Holy Alliance has been operating like the Jesuits in this manner for over 450 years, and we know there's a liaison between their office in Rome and what's called the Canadian Conference of Catholic Bishops, which again is based in Montreal, and it unites all the Catholic bishops. And basically, when they want to put a hit on somebody, they work with these elements within the RCMP to kill the people. Now, I believe that this RCMP officer who provides security for Senator Campbell, Jim Brown, based out of Vancouver, although he's also travels a lot to Ottawa, I believe this Jim Brown was one of the people who had Cal Gadban killed, because everything is pointing to this RCMP Holy Alliance liaison where they want to get rid of people. And, it's done very efficiently. We know from people in Montreal that that's exactly how Cal Gadban was taken out, because he was getting very close to exposing this link between the Canadian government and these Catholic bishops and the Ninth Circle killings.
And this is sort of what you mentioned to me earlier in terms of a quote-unquote cleaning of house that seems to be going on not only in Canada, but in Britain and in other countries as well.
Well, exactly, and you know they do it two ways. They first of all they do it with most people by fogging their minds, by co-opting it, by bringing in very benevolent looking people like Jorge Bergoglio to say, oh no, we're going to change things. We have zero tolerance for child rape. They never talk about the disappearance or killing of children. That's a taboo subject. But on that
and,
front,
and they also target everybody. Fishes.
But behind the scenes, they're actually killing people to get rid of witnesses. And we know that is for a fact. We saw that happen right in our work documenting the residential school crimes. Six of the members of our network, all Aboriginal, died under very questionable circumstances. We, you know, killed in hospital. In the case of Bingo Dawson, the toxicology report said he had no alcohol in his system, and yet they said he died of alcohol poisoning when another witness who himself died soon after talking about this saw six policemen beat Bingo Dawson just before he died. So this kind of thing happens openly in Canada. And that's why when people hear this, you know, for the first time, they shouldn't doubt it because it happened to, and it happens to Native people all the time. They just don't hear about it.
Right, this is happening more and more. You mentioned the zero tolerance policy from Jorge Mario Bergoglio announcing that zero tolerance policy, which to me really is not a zero tolerance policy for abuse of children or the trafficking of children. It's really a zero tolerance policy for people involved in these networks who get caught. And now we see a lot of small fish, whether it's a David Smith or some other people that get brought up in the mainstream media globally who are involved in these networks now in the present day. They're just, as you said, they're kind of like a benevolent face, somebody you wouldn't expect. And all of these different types of figures are being presented to the public almost as a sacrificial offering of saying, look, we're doing something about the abuse in the church. Look, we're doing something about the abuse within the political systems. And in reality, all they're doing is it's almost like a false flag where they're causing all of these problems. And then they just bring these so-called patsies to the forefront and say, look, we caught the bad guys. It's not going to happen again. And the more they do that, the more and more evidence comes out that this is deeper, darker, and much more horrendous than we ever could have imagined.
Well, yes, that's right, Ryan. And you know, it also operates at a deep psychological level. Don't forget, it's like the word apology. When people, we've all been trained to think that an apology means, oh, I'm sorry, I want to make it better. That's not the legal understanding of the word apology. The word apology means, I do not take responsibility for my action. In fact, I defend my action. That's what an apologetic is under the law. And so, similarly, the word policy means that's our stated belief. But it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to do it. It doesn't mean we're going to enforce the policy. It just means, yeah, you know, like anybody, we wouldn't like to see kids harmed. But it doesn't mean that just because we have a policy, we're going to enforce it. Because a perfect example of that was the very month that Pope Francis made the first zero tolerance policy statement to the media. He then turned around. It was, as a matter of fact, literally within days of him saying to the media, we don't tolerate child rape in the Catholic Church, he then told the Italian bishops, do not report child rape to the police.
Exactly.
So how can you, on the one hand, say we don't tolerate it, but we're going to conceal it? You know.
That's right. And you know what? Another thing I wanted to bring up is, and I don't mean this in a legal way, Kevin, but I see almost a type of public, social, cultural statute limitations on a lot of these crimes, where people such as the former Prime Minister Edward Heath, who died in 2005, people such as Cyril Smith, a Liberal legislator who died in 2010, people like Leon Britton, a former Tory Home Secretary and European Commissioner, and a bunch of other prominent entertainers such as Jimmy Savile and Britton. I'm just bringing this up because this is the research I've done extensively this week. People like this have been named for decades in the abuse of children, in the trafficking of children, in the sexual rape and the ritual killing of children and teenagers in some cases. And yet nothing is done to them until they die, and then once they die, then all the publicity gets shifted to them so that they can, so the media and so that these political and religious institutions that are involved in these networks can sort of throw a dead guy under the bus and say, look, yeah, we're finally going after them. I mean, just maybe if you could speak on that for a moment, because that's what this seems like to me. In a lot of these cases, these people die, and then all of a sudden the media hammers them for the bad things they did in their life.
Well, you know, I had personal experience of that. I was called right after I got fired by the United Church in 1995. I was approached by the lawyers for the first group of plaintiffs in Canada. There were 15 men and women suing the United Church for the Alberni residential school crimes. They were suing the United Church and the federal government of Canada jointly. And they basically threw one fish out. His name was Arthur Plint. He was a boys' dorm supervisor at the Alberni School, and he had raped kids serially for many years. He was the one defendant in the case. He was 77 years old and dying of cancer. And the court gave him 6 years, and they let him out after three or something, you know, for health reasons, humanitarian reasons, just because the poor guy was dying, right? But they didn't say who is it who had backed him up, who had turned a blind eye, who had protected him all those years. It was just all left out, and he was left to be the scapegoat. So that's the norm in these cases. And, you know, we see more of this all the time.
Absolutely, Kevin. And I think the more and more we see, the more and more the average person is beginning to realize and wake up to the fact that this is not one lunatic fringe of society, that this pervades all aspects of our culture. It's like a disease that has infested our society. And I think that it's very important, something you mentioned and also something I brought up several times, in order to understand and get into the mind of a killer, to get into the mind of these people psychologically, we have to study not only history, but study these profiles of how they act and how they speak and the different manipulated versions of language that they use so they can say something such as, well, we apologize, we have a policy, when it really means that they can do whatever they want. They just use the language because we, as individuals who have not been really taught what certain words mean, the origins etymologically of what certain words mean, we can get played on very easily. So the more and more this comes out, the more and more the public wakes up, and more we investigate and see how deep this goes, I think it's also important to realize that, again, this is not something new. This is not something that just started, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. This has essentially been going on since biblical times to some extent. And I think that these networks are really what has allowed, to some extent, whether it's fear or whatever it might be, allowed these elite dynastical individuals, if you will, to stay in power due to the fear and the mafia style tactics that they use. And I think that that's very important to realize, that this, again, is not something that's new, Kevin. It's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah, well, just in closing kind of on this, because I want to get on to some of the other things we talked about at this general council meeting this weekend, and, you know, some practical things we're doing about it. A final comment on that is that in microcosm, we see exactly what you're talking about on the Native reservations in Canada and the United States, where one chief is put in, just like they did Patrick Brezzo. But they've got dirt on all these chiefs. He's either the local drug dealer, he's got a history of child rape himself, and he's kept in power because they control him that way. And, you know, I remember my friend Wilf Price, he was my co-host on Hidden from History at the Vancouver Co-op Radio before they canceled the show. And as a matter of fact, on a side note, they canceled it because we had brought in two women who had seen RCMP officers take Aboriginal women out to Piggy's Palace. Within that week, the show gets canceled. I get banned from the station. Go figure. But anyway, Wilf Price said that when he got elected to the Assembly of First Nations, he was given a credit card, unlimited expense credit card by the government. And with that credit card, he could get anything or anyone he wanted. Children, women, booze, drugs, anything. Unlimited expense. And that's how they buy the native chiefs in Canada. That's why none of them have ever spoken out about the mass murder and the mass graves of children from their own people. You know, so it's a controlled leadership, and that's the reality with that. And it relates to this next kind of phase I want to talk about, which is at the council meeting, we put a big focus on what do we do in response. And I want to talk about that for a little bit, Ryan. There is now a plan in the works for a new common law court to be convened out of Brussels. This is the third one. The first about genocide in Canada, the second naming Pope Francis and others as being involved in this global child trafficking and the Ninth Circle rituals. This third one will be aimed specifically at these six defendants: Larry Campbell and Patrick Brezzo, Danilia Bell and Gerald Lacroix, Fred Hiltz and Bob Bennett. The six individuals who are going to be named in this common law court case that's going to commence, at least the initial pretrial process will begin out of Brussels early in January. That's the plan. Now, connected to that, you know, this was something they talked about right away. you know, they, I remember they turned to me right away and said, Kevin, you're on the front line here in Canada. You're the ones who's been doing this. We know, and this is not just idle rumor, we know that they've been monitoring you and they plan to take you out if you take this any further. So what are we going to do about it? And they decided that quarantine was the best. That doesn't mean hiding me away somewhere, but it means changing my movements, changing the usual way I operate in order to keep me alive long enough to allow this thing to go through. Now, in the past, that's worked, and I wanted to just flag that to a lot of our listeners, because I remember they've been asking not only what have we been doing, but this last weekend, Halloween weekend, was supposed to be the first convention for the Republic of Canada. As, and I want to talk about this a bit, because as the months passed, we found that not a lot of people were willing to come forward and actually take the step of establishing a constitutional framework for a new republic to dissociate ourselves from these murderous churches and government and the history of genocide. But there was a core of organizers who wanted to work more actively to get these things done. So we got those organizers together, and we were invited to meet with the General Council of the ITCCS out of Europe. And there's people. There were people from Europe, America, and Canada at this event. And the whole theme was, okay, what do we do now at the local level and globally to, you know, to start this process of not just exposing these individual criminals, but stopping these institutions once and for all? And that's really kind of the direction we're going in a lot of this work now.
And this new common law court that's being set up, or the new investigation, is going to take place at the beginning of next year?
The idea is that, you know, and we've got to caution about dates, because we have to coordinate the activities of a lot of people. There has to be security put in place first, not just for me in Canada, but for, you know, a lot of the witnesses who we've been mentioning,
right.
And the judges and others who are going to be operating out of Europe. So all of that has to go in place, but the process is going to begin early in January. And, you know, eventually there will be summonses served, this stuff will be out more. And, you know, that's at least when it's going to commence.
Right. And how significant is this in terms of the other two common law trials that found people such as, you know, Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, the Queen of England, Elizabeth, and Ratzinger guilty of these crimes basically against humanity? Is this basically alongside of those two court cases as well in terms of importance, or is this something that is of much higher importance due to the fact that this is very breaking at the moment?
Well, you know, we always said, Ryan, in this work that it's all a continuum. And one of the reasons, you know, some of our government-funded critics who have been all over the internet saying, oh, the ICCCS has been made up, it's all Kevin Annett, all these, you know, the lies and innuendo they're throwing at us. The main criticism is that we don't know who these judges are. We don't see enough court evidence from the trials and everything. The reality is that this is a work in progress. We have not exposed the evidence and the witnesses, obviously, or the names of the judges or the prosecutor.
Right, right.
They would be killed, for one thing, or taken out in some way, like that politician in Belgium was, Laurent Louis, after he sided with us publicly. But also, that's not the normal process in a trial. You don't go around naming who's the investigator. And, I mean, why would you do that in the first place? But we see this third trial as a continuum. It's been the result of a lot of hard research on the ground. And, you know, the reason we know this about these six new accused individuals is because we did a lot of work just off the radar screen, talking to individuals, tracing leads, putting it all together. And that's kind of a lot of the hard, dirty work that needs to be done. It's not glamorous, and most of it isn't public at all, but it's still happening. And, you know, like a mole underground. And that's exactly how a lot of the work of the ITCCS goes on now. But it results in all of these resignations. Look at what Bergoglio is doing. You know, it's unprecedented, the impact we're having just by continuing to expose this. And I rest assured that after going public with these new six named accused, you're going to see another response. You know, there was a federal election in Canada where the son of Pierre Trudeau is now the prime minister, Justin Trudeau. And, of course, he's tried to make it look like he's going to begin a new era of openness in Canada and everything. But all of that is just pretense. They're going to be under pressure to show that, no, we are different than the Harper government. Well, let them demonstrate that by putting Denis Lebel on trial. And we have all the evidence. We're going to provide it. This man is a murderer, And it doesn't matter that he has some kind of cabinet protection or anything like that as a former politician. He needs to be indicted, and we're going to start the process.
I'm just curious, where is the Picton Farm located?
The Picton Farm was in a suburb of Vancouver called Coquitlam. That's to the east of Vancouver a little bit. It's kind of a suburban area. And it was all over the news but for a number of years, but... I had a real inside view of this working in the downtown east side because the way the media was reporting it was very different than what people on the ground were saying. They, time and again, the women who I was talking to on the streets, and I'd worked there as a minister for 30 years almost, so I knew a lot of these women. The people who were disappearing, they time and again said, no, it was the Mounties who were taking them out to the Picton Farm. The Mounties and the Pictons have a business connection through the Hells Angels, because everyone in Vancouver knows that the Mounties are some of the biggest dealers, and their business partners are the bikers. And, you know, that's just common knowledge when you work on the street down there. You know where the drug houses are, you know who the Mounties are who are dealing. I mean, it's just common sense that, there's that connection.
I think it's important also, since you mentioned the aspect of drug dealing or drug trafficking along with the trafficking of children, that this isn't some isolated, corrupt form of government. This is almost a form of shadow government. It's almost a mafia that operates inside of most global governments. So it is a type of mafia, and they use mafia style tactics to keep people afraid, including the disinformation agents who run around. And believe me, I've heard this since the first time I started talking to you. People message me, just a lot of internet trolls, and say, why would you talk to Kevin? Everything's made up. He's not, some people even say, oh, he's not even a real person. It's just a bunch of people masquerading. I'm like, well, if I'm talking to a different person every time I talk to Kevin, they do some really great impressions. So it's just ridiculous how they'll say stuff like that. And when people want results, even if it was in the mainstream media, which the TRC admittance of the genocide in Canada was in the New York Times here in America, which is about as mainstream as you can get, even though people see that, they go into denial about it. So even though that's in the mainstream media, Kevin, we have all of these court cases and the different adjudicated cases by the ICLCJ. And when we have those two cases that convicted and showed evidence through witness testimony and other forms of evidence of the guilt of the people that were involved, 27 plus individuals, high levels of government, politics, and so on and so forth, that were involved in the murder of children and the trafficking of children, the theft of children. People want more evidence, and they want someone to do something about it, they say. And then when you show them the evidence, such as some of the court documents that have been released, they say, well, that's not enough evidence. We want more evidence. They're not actually looking for evidence. They're not actually looking for any type of facts. They're just looking for anything so that they can tell themselves and tell anybody around themselves, make themselves feel better that they're telling themselves, no, this isn't true. No, this isn't true.
Yeah, and right.
Go ahead.
People look for what is going to affirm their worldview.
Right,
and it's
exactly.
Not a matter of evidence. It's a matter of they don't want their worldview challenged. I had continual experience of that with reporters, where at demonstrations and that at churches, I would say to reporters, look, there's Harriet Nahanni. She witnessed a killing. Look, there's Harry Wilson. He buried bodies at the school. Go talk to them. And these reporters, at time and again, would walk away. They would not report it. They wouldn't even talk to the people. That's kind of symbolic of the way most people are about these things. Yeah, it really doesn't matter anymore whether we move the majority, because they are not willing to be moved. The real question now, and we talked about this last weekend, how are we going to move that minority who are conscious, who are angry, who want to do something about this? That's going to be the focus. And next week, on November 8th, I want to get into that more about what our strategy is now for taking back power wherever we are, in common law courts, in people's assemblies. Those assemblies are not going to consist of Joe Blow walking down the street. Hi, okay, I want to be part of a new common law republic.
Right.
They're not going to be the people in the assemblies. It's going to be the conscious minority. People who are listening to the show and that, who have to do more than just listen. They've got to now engage and say, we're living in a criminal society. We're operating under criminal institutions. We do not owe them our allegiance, right? And we can tell the police and others, you've got to switch your allegiance back to the people and to justice.
Right, and by basic basically and literally in some cases pledging your allegiance to these criminal systems. You are acquiescing in the very crimes that these people are guilty of. And that example you gave of the reporters and the witnesses, I think it's important to realize that what corporations do and what the media does is that even though you'll give them a witness, you'll give them the evidence, if they ignore it and they don't interview that witness, Kevin, or they don't look at that evidence, then they can get away on the general public's, you know, mass perception, the trust that they have in authority by saying, we don't actually have any evidence that there were so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so involved in these crimes. And they don't have evidence, not because there is none, but it's because they didn't go look for it. They didn't accept the evidence. They didn't interview the witnesses. And that's the difference between other investigators in the mainstream and, of course, what we've been doing and what you've been doing with the common law.
Right, well, you know, it really always comes down to who, you know, who do you trust? And people haven't learned to trust themselves. They don't, they've never had an experience of self-governance, right? Nobody has. So to expect people to turn around and say, yeah, we've got to start arresting these people, even if they are politicians, even if they have the law on their side, they don't have the right to go around and kill our children. That's just common sense. People can't make the leap then to say, okay, then I've got to do something about it, I and people like me. So I, you know, we've been battering away at that that frozen, whatever you want to call it, in people that refuses to budge, including among the conscious minority. And all we can do is, I guess you could consider the show today as a form of shock therapy. Say, look, we're naming exactly who they are. We've got solid evidence. We know what they're doing. There are going to be children dying at the hands of these men and their agents time and again. If we don't stop them, the blood of those children is on all of our hands because, in a way, we're worse than they are. You know, they're criminals and depraved, but if we, who aren't, don't do anything about it, aren't we worse?
I think so, and I think that the most basic thing people can do, Kevin, is pass around this information for today's show, whether it's the file, which will be available online for the entire show, or maybe you took a few notes during the show. You know, people use social media constantly, post it on social media, spread the word that way. You know, even if you want to be an internet warrior, be an internet warrior, spread the information in whatever way that you possibly can.
Right. Now, itccs.org is a site. I know, Ryan, that you're going to be putting something up on YouTube, and we'll have that link up at itccs.org about this. And go into more background, as we will next week, on what people can do now. And by that, I'm also talking about in places like Vancouver, where there are people on the ground who provided us this information. They're going to be taking public action on this, too. Whether it's Montreal or Vancouver and Ottawa, there's people working with us who are going to be doing more than talking. They're going to be confronting these individuals and shutting down these ritual ceremonies of killing of children. We'll get into that more next week. Do you have announcements about your shows and websites and all that?
Absolutely. Tonight at 7 p.m. in the mountains, which is 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will be live again tonight for the Secret Teachings from 9 to midnight Eastern Standard Time. The first half hour of that broadcast tonight, I will actually have you, Kevin, on the program to sort of review some of the issues we've talked about tonight. I will also have some additional news, including human DNA found in a lot of different meat products. That's significant, and I think that also ties in with what we've been discussing in a different direction. And we'll also be talking about the origins of the occult sacrificial holiday or ancient holy day of Samhain, Samhain, or Halloween. Today, of course, is All Souls Day, tomorrow All Saints Day, both of those coined by the church to sort of integrate the ancient pagan teachings into that of the church and the religious teachings of those institutions. So that's tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern. You'll be joining us live for that first half hour, 40 minutes. And if you'd like to call in and talk to us tonight, we'll also give out a number on the show and on our website, thesecretteachings.info. That's www.thesecretteachings.info.
Yeah, now, how do people actually listen to the show? By going to that site?
Yes, they can go to thesecretteachings.info. They can also go to Late Night in the Midlands, which is the radio station, one of the primary stations. Or you can also go onto your smart device or your tablet, and there's an application that a lot of people have called TuneIn. It's a radio application, and all you do is go into the TuneIn app and search for LNM radio, and it'll bring it right up, and you can stream it for free.
Okay. Now, we've got about just about 5 minutes left, and one of the things I wanted to mention, Ryan, which, again, we'll talk about in the future, but we know that there's importance on the dates of when these killings happen. We want to get into more of why they are going on, why they seem to be increasing, the violation and killing of children, what we think is kind of the strategy on the part of the elites behind this. And so, you know, I do want to get into that more. Also, what we're going to be doing in future shows is, and I didn't mention this today, but I got a phone call from a very old friend of mine. She's a Cree woman in northern Alberta. I don't want to mention her name yet. But she was a nurse in hospitals in northern Alberta, and she has a lot of firsthand information about the sterilization programs running out of the United Church Hospital in Edmonton, the Charles Camsell Hospital, ovary removals, the removal of teeth. And actually, she has four Native women who are survived lobotomies in the 1960s that were being performed on any woman who was speaking her own language. They just give them a lobotomy to make them forget how to talk in Cree. So there's a lot of that, you know, we didn't have time for today, but I want to feature this woman very soon. She's agreed to be interviewed, and she's yet another example of an eyewitness to these crimes. When people say, where's the proof? We haven't wanted to bring out the eyewitnesses, because every time we did in the course of our work, these people would disappear, either be killed, you know, end up dead, or just disappear somewhere, or suddenly become very silent and not want to talk anymore. So we've had to be very protective of our witnesses and the evidence. We have even more startling evidence that we didn't mention today about these things, but of course we're not going to compromise that evidence by talking about it yet. But people have to realize that the evidence we're talking about is very solid, and it's visual as well. That's all I want to say about that for now. But any final thoughts on that, Ryan?
Yeah, I think something that's important to flag very quickly is, as this is the Samhain, Samhain, Halloween weekend, the ancient Irish tradition, the Druidic New Year, also called Witch's New Year, they would actually perform a mock sacrifice to appease the gods, where they would have somebody symbolically, metaphorically thrown onto a fire who would die, and their soul would basically just sort of hover around the fire for the rest of the event. Now, when those mystery teachings were perverted by the church, by what were called the black magicians of ancient Egypt and Greece, they took these practices to be literal, and they literally started sacrificing children. They literally started sacrificing animals to appease the gods, and that's when the concept of blood drinking, literal blood drinking, began. So the child sacrifice of today is a perverted version of the ancient mysteries, and it also ties in with the metaphorical and literal communion, which is performed in church by the consumption of the wine, which is the blood, and of the cracker or the wafer, which is the flesh. I just think that's important to know, that these rituals are essentially perversions of ancient mysteries and ancient secret teachings.
Well, it's also the fact, just kind of final note on that too, is that when we often get, there's the official line of what goes on and then what's really happening behind it. Often when you hear about drug testing, and it's assumed that the testing of these drugs and that are going on animals. In fact, when they say animal, they're talking about a person who's considered an animal. We know for a fact that we've documented how in these drug testing programs, when they claim to be testing them on rabbits or dogs or something, in fact, they're using prisoners, they're using children out of orphanages.
Absolutely.
And so on. So
absolutely.
This is what we have to keep in mind. Just because they say something doesn't mean it's literal.
Just like the policy, like we talked about earlier.
That's right. So, we didn't actually arrange a final going away song for today, but I figured there'd be so much to talk about. So we
I can
have
sing
a few
something
more
for you.
But I do want to end on this note to everyone listening, that please, it's very important that you share the information we're going to post on itccs.org this week, on YouTube that Ryan is going to be posting, and you can find the link there at our website. But take that information and get people to tune in next Sunday, November 8th, here on BBS. radio.com/radiofreecanada, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, and we will carry this on. We're going to be having more eyewitnesses to this on over the next little while, and I don't want to end on a morbid note, but literally, if anything ever happens to me, it is a responsibility of everyone listening to carry this on, because if we don't, then we are no different and no better than the people who do this to children. We have a moral, not a moral and a legal and a spiritual responsibility to put this first in our lives. So I just want to end that on that note and say I'm happy that I've been alive this long to witness all the great successes we've had. And I know, you know, we who are doing this work have this kind of protection that we will carry on. So any final thoughts, Ryan?
It, just as you said, it is our right and our responsibility to expose the people who are guilty of these crimes against humanity. And it's just like the concept of rights. If you give up your rights as an individual, you've essentially helped give up the rights of others. And if others give up their rights, they've helped give up your rights. You have to stand up for everybody's rights. And if somebody's guilty of a crime, you know about it and do nothing to expose it. A true crime, not a crime that the state sees as dissent, but a true crime, then you are just as guilty of that crime if you don't do everything you can to expose it.
30 seconds left, and thanks everyone for tuning in today. We'll be back here next Sunday, itccsoffice@gmail.com. If you want more information, write to us, volunteer. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear.